Hey, I'll check out the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism Versus Capitalism, narrated by me, Scott Horton, at audible.com. It's a great collection of his essays and speeches on the important tradition of liberty. From medieval history to the Ron Paul Revolution, Rockwell blasts our statist enemies, profiles our greatest libertarian heroes, and prescribes the path forward in the battle against Leviathan. Fascism Versus Capitalism by Lou Rockwell for audiobook. Find it at Audible, Amazon, iTunes, or just click in the right margin of my website at scotthorton.org. All right, you guys, welcome back to the thing here, man. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. Hey, guess what? I got Sheldon Richmond on the line. Hey, Sheldon, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, Scott. Thanks for having me back.
Very good to have you on. Sorry, everybody, for the audio quality. My Skype computer exploded. I'm going to work on that. But anyway, I can hear you okay. Sheldon, I'm happy to have you on the show because there's some things I want to ask you about, some things that, of course, you've written about. Oh, and you guys know Sheldon, he's from all those libertarian institutions that you've heard of, over the years, and is a regular writer for antiwar.com. His own website is sheldonrichmond.com, free association, it's called, free association at sheldonrichmond.com. And, if you just type in Sheldon Richmond China, you'll get all kinds of stuff, decades worth of articles about trade. And so, I guess kind of sort of the way I want to set this up, Sheldon, is to try to put you on the defensive here. Evil establishmentarians like Jeb Bush and Hillary Clinton, they like all these big free trade deals with countries like Mexico and China, and the, insurgents from the outside, Trump and Sanders, they're sticking up for the American worker and the American people and saying we're sick and tired of these corporations moving all of American people, American workers' jobs overseas where they don't have jobs anymore. And now even studies coming out talking about life expectancy getting shorter and shorter for people as they just sit home drinking and smoking and dying, instead of working, because I don't know if you saw this, but there's a viral video that Trump referred to in the most recent debate that was going around last week of this air conditioner company announcing to everybody, sorry, dude, we're moving the factory to Mexico. That's the way it is. Business is business. Got to keep costs down. And so, I think, I'm going to unfairly lump you in with Jeb Bush and Hillary Clinton and say you are for what's destroying America, and that is why everybody is turning to Trump and Sanders to save them from the destructive forces of the free market and free trade, Sheldon. So now defend yourself.
Well, I must lodge a protest at being thrown into the same bin with Jeb Bush and Hillary Clinton and those others.
Okay.
Just as a quick aside, Trump ought to be of really mixed emotions about Carrier moving to Mexico, because if Carrier moves to Mexico and creates a lot of jobs down there, that'll be fewer Mexicans will sneak across the border to come here. So he should be happy about that.
Yeah.
So I don't know why he hasn't at least given us a little asterisk to his complaint about that. But here's what I'd say overall, just to get to the big picture first. Historically in the United States, free traders have given free trade a bad name. And by that I mean the leading American office holders and influential people throughout, I mean, from the very beginning of the country. When they talked about trade, the people that were regarded as open to trade still saw that as a government policy. They wanted the government to open up, and this was true of obviously manufacturers and merchants and whatnot. They wanted the government to open up markets, whether using the full range of tools available, or I should say weapons, from diplomacy all the way to gunboats. That's what was considered free trade. And of course, the opposite side of that is you could withhold trade, and we saw presidents from early on, John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, they used trade as a weapon. They imposed embargoes. Jefferson called it peaceful coercion. If you want to make some sense of that term. So trade, even among people who were open to trade, like the idea of trade and didn't want to close themselves off, who were not, let's say, mercantilists, still saw trade as government policy, which means it was still being done at the bidding of particular interests. It wasn't just, hey, let Americans as individuals or as voluntary groups of individuals trade with whomever they want. Nobody was taking that position. Oh, maybe there were a few people that we would regard as the libertarians of the day, but they were not the influential people. They weren't making policy. So trade has always been seen as a government tool. And so these so-called free trade agreements, we shouldn't be surprised if that's just another form that this has taken. And these agreements, which are always, what, 1,000 or more pages? I mean, if it's free, really free trade, why would you need 1,000 pages? You just say, at midnight tonight, all trade restrictions in the United States are hereby repealed, period. That's it. Instead, there's all kinds of commissions that are set up, and people can claim, hey, these are unelected commissions. How do we know what these bureaucrats who get appointed, how do we know what they're going to decide? What's the recourse if we don't like the decision? There's all those problems. A very big problem, which I heard you mention the other day, is these so-called free trade agreements always impose very strict IP regimes, intellectual property regimes, on developing economies. In other words, our so-called, it's not mine, but the establishment's view of how patents and copyrights should be enforced, or should be enforced at all, are imposed on budding economies, which has a stifling effect that makes them dependent on American manufacturers. That's not free trade. But it's called free trade, and therefore it gives plausible grounds to Trump and Sanders to complain about it as simply another form of big special interest, favors to well-connected interests. And they're right in that regard. However, it's not free trade.
Okay, and now, so I want to get more into what is in those deals and things like OPIC, the Overseas Private Investment Corporation, where government is literally subsidizing, encouraging companies to offshore, doing everything they can to help them do it, and all this kind of thing. You know, pro-tobacco programs and anti-tobacco programs at the same time. It is government that we're talking about here. But what about that? Maybe, I don't know, Sheldon, it sort of kind of sounds like a cop-out. Like, well, yeah, but true communism ain't been tried, and no true Scotsman would ever do a thing like that, so you must not be one. Because, after all, Chinese will work for cheaper than Americans will. You can't deny it, man. Labor is cheaper in poorer countries, and so it makes perfect, on paper sense for American corporations to move their factories over there. Why wouldn't they?
China makes the same complaint about Vietnam and other places, so Trump is only partially aware of this. He'll complain about China, and then he'll throw in Vietnam and say, well, you know, Vietnam too. In other words, the wave of development toward places with abundant labor, and therefore low-cost labor, is already passing China by, and people in China complain about that. So that's the way of the world. Under freedom, that's going to happen. But that doesn't mean people are then in a dynamic economy. If the U.S. economy were actually freed, that doesn't mean people then are forever unemployed and sit around and commit suicide and drink and do that because there's nothing else to do. In a dynamic economy, I mean, look at all the jobs that exist today, even in our corporatist economy, that didn't exist 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 50 years ago. Who, sitting 50 years ago, we'd sit back, and if I said, well, you know, people will get work, programming phones that we're going to carry around in our pockets that are going to be more powerful than what they can put in a satellite today. You'd say, what are you, a dreamer? Are you crazy? In other words, we don't know what will come along if the economy is actually free. But we know some things will come along. We can make that kind of pattern prediction, to use the Hayek phrase. The new things will come along, even if we can't say exactly what. Now, that gives us some disadvantage in making an argument, right? Because we have to point to something vague. Oh, yes, something will come along. That's how. So you can easily say, oh, sure, something will come along, fine. But look at the past. Look at the past. You know, imagine somebody from 1700 coming to the United States, coming to our time, and looking around, and you're taking them on a tour of the economy, of our society, and you show him your iPhone, and he'll say something like, well, that's very cool and all, but how do you draw people away from the farm? I mean, don't you need people to grow food? How can you afford to have them making this thing, not food? Food's more important than this. And you'd say, you don't get it. We didn't draw people away from the farm. They weren't needed on the farm anymore. Now they're making iPhones or whatever they're making. I know iPhones are made in China, but something else. That's how economic development occurs when economies are free.
All right, now hold it right there. I'm going to pretend to argue with Sheldon Richman as best I can more on the other side of this break. SheldonRichman.com and antiwar.com for his great stuff. Hey, Al Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world, all specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com.
So you're a libertarian, and you don't believe the propaganda about government awesomeness you were subjected to in fourth grade. You want real history and economics. Well, learn in your car from professors you can trust with Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom. And if you join through the Liberty Classroom link at scotthorton.org, we'll make a donation to support the Scott Horton Show. Liberty Classroom, the history and economics they didn't teach you.
Hey, I'm Scott. Welcome back to the show. I'm talking with Sheldon Richmond. He used to be at the Foundation for Economic Education, the editor of their journal there. He's at the Future Freedom Foundation, editor of their journal there. Now he's regularly contributing for us at antiwar.com, and he's written 10 million articles about the what I would consider the most very libertarian take on every single thing in the world. Just type in Sheldon Richmond and whatever it is you're interested in, and you're going to find something cool. Right now we're talking about trade and how, well, Trump and Sanders, they're sticking up for the little guy by saying we don't want to have these deals with Mexico and China anymore. Now, Sheldon says he opposes whatever the current deals are that, you know, have all their flaws in them, and he would rather have actual free trade. So we're talking about, you know, overall, I guess we need to get into whether protectionism could serve the American people better. I mean, after all, there are towns, I don't know, maybe this is more mythology than truth, Sheldon, but there are towns, I think, where, you know, almost whole towns or huge portions of the population of a town are built around one big factory, something like that. And when that factory closes, that's people's lives. That's, you know, families separated from each other. That's human tragedy falls in the wake of that virtually every time. And all the people in town who didn't work for that factory still suffer the same loss and everything else. And you know how it is. So, you know, maybe Trump should threaten them to not move to Mexico, and maybe the Mexicans should just make their own damn air conditioner company or something like that.
Well, look, here's the problem. When you legislate stagnation, which is what you're saying, if we're honest about it, legislate against change, freeze change, you hurt a whole lot of other people, including people in the United States. Not only does it harms the people who are way poorer in other countries, but it hurts Americans too, many of whom are not doing well. They'll be deprived of lower prices. They'll be deprived of products that would make their lives better or save their lives, because that's what you get from trade and the division of labor and comparative advantage if the government is not tilting the scales one way or another. The great pro-peace, anti-war free trader of the 19th century in England, Richard Cobden, said that if you apply violence to trade, you distort trade the same way that if you apply violence to religion. It's not religion. So it's not trade if you apply violence to it. That means all subsidies, and I include the military, the War Department, I don't call it the Defense Department, the big military subsidy that, say, long-distance shippers get, or the highway subsidies that long-distance road shippers, surface shippers enjoy, that's all subsidy, which comes, forcing other people. Mm-hmm. So, yes, you can look at a town that was built around one factory and say, look at the hardship. But in a dynamic economy, there'd be change. But most turnover historically in jobs comes not from the fact that foreigners produce what those people used to produce, but from technological change. You know, factories today, automobile factories today, hardly have any people in them. It's all computerized. There's a few programmers sitting up in a control room and a few people on the floor. It's not the way it used to be. That's not because of foreigners. There are factories here. Manufacturing has not shrunk as a percentage. It's only shrunk as a percentage of the economy because the service economy has grown. We still make a huge amount of things in this country, but we just need fewer people to make those things. Now those people are available for other things. If the economy were completely open and free, and I mean by that sweeping away intellectual property, sweeping away licensing laws, building permits, eminent domain, all the things, you know, Trump would not be complaining about, then you get a dynamism. Mm-hmm. But to say in order to protect workers, we're going to freeze the current condition as it is, makes no sense. What if they'd done that 50 years ago? You and I wouldn't be talking today, would we? Well, we might be talking over a landline, but you certainly wouldn't be using computers to get on the air and things like that. So why is this moment in time the right moment to freeze?
Mm-hmm. All right, now, so I'm sure it's been a little while since you've read the thing, but so what is exactly then the difference between NAFTA and, hey, let's just have free trade? I mean, what all is actually in that thing other than opening the border to trade?
A few thousand pages, I guess, is the difference.
Yeah, but I mean, what's on them? Maybe it just says, a little bit of kickback here or there, but it's not really much. I don't know.
It doesn't. It has all kinds of technical exceptions. They made exceptions for sugar. They always do stuff like that. Some special interests will get set aside. You get demands that there be an IP regime, which is very stifling. Look, if a factory in a very poor area, poor country, wants to say the hell with Nike, we can make our own sneakers and export them to the United States. Nike will come in with all their power, all their money, all their lawyers, and say you're infringing on our patent or our copyright or whatever, trademark, whatever, even if they're not calling you Nike, and they'll crush them. So those people then become dependent on those factories. And then often those companies work with, at least sometimes, they work with the local governments there, the national governments in those poor countries, to drive people off the farms out of the rural areas by taking their land or whatnot, driving them into the cities so you have all this very cheap labor available to Western-owned factories. That's not freedom. Now, we can't really do anything about that, what a government in Sri Lanka may be doing. Obviously, we don't want the U.S. government dictating policy to them. But these so-called free trade agreements dictate policy to them and cooperate in the dispossessing people of land so that they have very little choice but to go into these factories. That's not free trade. And Trump ought to understand that. He's now a throwback to the old narrow-minded protectionism that doesn't understand these positions.
He sounds like you, Sheldon. Some of the time he says, I'm for free trade, but these are crooked deals, and I don't want these deals, which give the advantage to China, not us.
Yeah, but he'd be saying the same. He doesn't like the idea of companies moving, period, out of the country. They're our jobs. They're not our jobs. You can't own jobs. And that's a know-nothing appeal. That's a throwback to the most unsophisticated form of protectionism that exists. That somehow we own this economy, we own this culture. Look at it across all his issues. We own the culture. We have we, meaning him, and his cronies eventually, if you were to get into office, we'll decide what infringes on our culture, what infringes on our economy. That's not economic freedom. Free trade is what Adam Smith talked about, and he condemned all the subsidies and interferences. Even if it's in the name of expanding trade, it's still government using force on behalf of special interests.
All right, now in the next couple of minutes here, last couple of minutes here, Sheldon, I want you to address the robots because you brought it up too. This is the majority of the change when it comes to manual labor, factory labor. In American society is the robots, and I don't know if you saw this, but you've seen them before in the past at least. This new one is from The Telegraph. Robots will take over most jobs within 30 years. Warren's expert, the rise of robots could lead to unemployment rates greater than 50%. And I know you're going to say, yeah, but they'll be driving prices down if we had a free market. Well, we don't. And that's a high unemployment rate. Maybe we need Bernie Sanders to put everybody on welfare.
Well, robots aren't going to be performing services. And, I don't know why we put down the service economy as if that's something inferior. It need not be. Services can be finance, insurance, healthcare, a lot of things. This is, again, a throwback to the idea of the physiocrats believe that, only working the land was the only real wealth, right? This has gone through a series of revisions of thinking where, you know, they pick up on one thing and say, that's wealth. And if that changes, oh, my gosh, the world's going to come to an end. At least our country's going to come to an end. Lots of people, you know, reject this idea that someday robots will be doing everything. And don't forget, if they're making things that nobody can buy, then they're not going to stay in business very long. So, they're, you know, that can't be the long-term story. I think that's we can reject that. I mean, I know Tyler Cowen, even a fairly free market guy, has warned that we're in for this great stagnation. But even in his own thesis, he's just saying, oh, this could easily get reversed through some big discovery in 10 years. But you know, it's always bad to bet that there's not going to be some breakthrough that people make in the future, because if they're free, there's an incentive, there's an entrepreneurial incentive, namely a profit incentive, to make those big breakthroughs. And look at the breakthroughs we lived through that people weren't predicting. Most people weren't predicting. The few people that did were thought to be just visionaries who were unrealistic, utopians.
Count me in.
Freedom works.
Sheldon Richman, everybody. He's at SheldonRichman.com. That's his great blog, Free Association. Just type in his name in China. You'll find a bunch at FEE and FFF and elsewhere. Thanks again, Sheldon.
My pleasure, Scott. Anytime.
See y'all tomorrow. Thanks. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. If this nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone, we are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new ebook by longtime Future Freedom author Scott McPherson, Freedom and Security, the Second Amendment and the Right to Keep and Bear Arms. This is the definitive principled case in favor of gun rights and against gun control. America is exceptional. Here the people come first, and we refuse to allow the state a monopoly on firearms. Our liberty depends on it. Get Scott McPherson's Freedom and Security, the Second Amendment and the Right to Keep and Bear Arms on Kindle at Amazon.com today. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers. Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck.